I'm going to have to do a lot of soul searching and listen to a lot of Alaskans before I change my vote from a no to a yes.
Alaska's congressional delegation considers the new bailout package. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 1st of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a judge prepares to hear arguments on a lawsuit to end the legislature's Troopergate investigation.
My hunch is that ultimately the court will say no, that the court has no business interfering in that investigation.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. You can prevent costly damage to the environment with an inspection of heating equipment and fuel oil tanks. Spills can contaminate drinking water and stormwater drains, which can cause health problems for people and animals. Technical assistance is available online at dec.state.ak.us. Click on the Spill Prevention and Response link for assistance to the Home Heating Oil webpage. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
Two people were killed today when a small airplane lost power shortly after takeoff and crashed on a city street in Anchorage. The crash occurred near the Merrifield Airport. Anchorage Deputy Fire Chief Michelle Weston says no one on the ground was hurt. Authorities say the Cessna 206 took off, banked to the left, and clipped the top of an empty one-story commercial building. The plane then crashed onto a residential street and caught fire. Clint Johnson, an aircraft accident investigator with the National Transportation Safety Board, said the plane was destroyed on impact. Johnson says investigators are looking into why the plane lost power. The names of the victims were not immediately released. Former Vico CEO Bill Allen testified in U.S. District Court today that he did extensive work on Senator Ted Stevens' home and didn't get paid for it. Allen also said he asked Stevens for favors over the years. Stevens is on trial in Washington for 7 counts of lying on his financial disclosure forms about gifts worth more than $250,000 from Allen and Vico. From Washington, APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Senator Stevens and Bill Allen may have once been close friends and fishing buddies, but you wouldn't know it in the Washington, D.C. courtroom. Stevens spends more time looking down at a pad where he's scribbling notes than he does looking at Allen on the witness stand. During Wednesday's testimony, Allen detailed projects he had Vico employees do at the Stevens home in Girdwood, including design the remodel plans. He said Vico workers built metal stairs and landings, moved a large generator, and strung thousands of dollars in Christmas lights around the property. Prosecutors entered into evidence letters in which Stevens thanks Allen for his help. Stevens wrote that the remodeled design plans pleased his wife, and in a handwritten note thanked Allen for all he had done to make the Stevens lives, quote, easier and more enjoyable, and that the Christmas lights, quote, top it all. One letter calls Allen and another mutual friend the spark plugs to getting the renovation project done. Twice in a letter and an email, both written in 2002, Stevens asked Allen to send him a bill. He wrote in October, quote, friendship is one thing, compliance with the ethics rules is entirely different. But Allen said he never did charge Stevens because he liked the senator and wanted to help him. Allen said he believed Stevens didn't really want a bill and was just protecting himself. Allen said he and a mutual friend, Stevens' neighbor Bob Persons, talked about billing the senator, but that according to Allen, Persons said not to worry, that, quote, Ted's just covering his ass. Allen then reflected that perhaps such language wasn't appropriate in the courthouse. It was a hint of the other, rougher side of Allen's personality. On Tuesday, he was presented to jurors as a success story, but by the end of Wednesday's testimony, the jury had learned that the 71-year-old faces a decade in prison for bribing state lawmakers. And Allen said he asked Senator Stevens for favors. In 1999, Vico wasn't getting dividends on the profits of a Pakistani oil pipeline it invested in, so Stevens wrote a letter to the World Bank about the situation, which was eventually resolved. Allen also said the two corresponded about gas pipeline legislation in Alaska. He wanted Stevens to talk to state senators who weren't voting the way Allen wanted, and in an email, Stevens said he would. Allen said on some occasions he did not think Stevens helped him, even though Allen asked for his assistance getting a National Science Foundation contract and talking to the mayor of Delta Junction about a private prison. Stevens' lawyers say their client only sided with Allen on issues when it was for the good of Alaska. After all, they say, VECO was one of the state's biggest private companies. They'll have a chance to cross-examine Allen on Thursday. The trial recessed early Wednesday, leaving much of Allen's testimony still to come. Judge Emmett Sullivan said the early dismissal was at the request of a juror. When the trial picks back up, prosecutors plan to play audio tapes of Stevens and Allen talking, and then it will be Stevens' lawyer's turn to question the government's star witness. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Senator Stevens went from his trial straight to work at the U.S. Capitol. The Senate is voting tonight on a new version of the $700 billion financial industry bailout. The revised package temporarily increases the federal insurance cap on banking deposits from $100,000 to $250,000. It also adds $100 million in tax breaks for businesses and the middle class. Earlier today, Senator Stevens said he was inclined to support the bill. He says the stock market can't take another fall like Monday when the Dow lost almost 800 points.
We don't want any more precipitous falls like that because it will wipe out the ability of our people who rely on retirement funds to survive. This is for us. This bill is for people who are working people who have money in their retirement fund and running money accounts and savings accounts and money put away to help the kids go to school.
Stevens says it's wrong to characterize the bill as only helping Wall Street. He says every Alaskan has a stake in seeing the financial system recover. Stevens says the permanent fund lost $1 billion on Monday after the U.S. House failed to pass an earlier version of the bill. But Stevens is still getting calls, mostly from Alaskans who are against a bailout in any form.
I'm hearing an increase in people saying you should vote for it, but it's still not a majority. I think by the time people at home understand what this is, and by the time they really realize that the basic fund that supports the future of Alaska, the permanent fund, has already decreased as a result of this problem that's been developed from this mortgage fiasco, they'll understand this.
The bill also contains two provisions of special interest to Alaskans. It allows Exxon Valdez spill plaintiffs to spread out the value of their award for 3 years to soften the tax implications of the payout. And it reauthorizes the Secure Rural Schools Act, which provides millions of dollars in education funding for schools in Southeast Alaska. The bill is expected to pass the Senate and will likely come up for a vote in the House on Friday. Congressman Don Young says he likes a few things about the new bill, but at this point he's not ready to vote yes.
There's some more safeguards, but there's still not enough oversight to say how is this money going to be spent. And again, I want to stress the fact that this is a slippery slope we're on right now. And I'm not confident it's good for America, and then I'm going to have to do a lot of soul searching and listen to a lot of Alaskans before I change my vote from a no to a yes.
Young says Alaskans are still overwhelmingly asking him to vote no. He says he wasn't surprised when the Dow tumbled after the House vote on Monday. He points out that the markets have already gained back a lot of what they lost. As U.S. lawmakers debate the financial bailout plan, small business owners in Alaska may be having a harder time lining up credit. Small Business Administration-backed loans to Alaska companies have fallen 18% for fiscal year 2008, which ended yesterday, the SBA guaranteed 141 loans compared to 171 last year. Sam Dickey is the agency's deputy district director for Alaska. He says if small businesses can't get credit they want, there could be a ripple effect across the state's economy. He says entrepreneurs who can't access capital have to postpone hiring and other plans.
It could be existing businesses are not following through an expansion plan. They're not expanding product lines. They're not adding rooms to the B&B.
Dickey says the Mat-Su and Anchorage areas accounted for the biggest fall-off in loans. Nationally, SBA loans to entrepreneurs have plummeted. Volume in the agency's principal loan program has fallen 30%, with 28,000 fewer loans approved so far this year compared to last. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a look at Anchorage's growing homeless problem.
As of this morning, 1,342 homeless children and youth have been identified by Anchorage School District.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
Tech Cominco and the Red Dog Mine, encouraging listeners to tune into AK every weekend. Check your local public radio station for airtimes.
All the litigation and the political bickering over the investigation around the firing of Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan will finally get a day in court tomorrow morning. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The Anchorage Superior Court will hear a challenge to the legislature's authority to investigate Monaghan's firing. The case was filed by five legislators and several citizens from Fairbanks. It was then combined with a case in a similar vein filed by Attorney General Talis Kohlberg and employees of the Palin administration, who had been subpoenaed by the Senate Judiciary Committee. The state employees had refused an order to divulge what they know about the firing. The hearing will decide whether the court will stop the legislative council from releasing a report on the investigation, now scheduled for the end of next week. Senate Judiciary Chairman Hollis French says the court will be asked to get involved in the well-established separation of powers between the executive and legislative branches of state government.
My hunch is that ultimately the court will say no, that the court has no business interfering in that investigation. But of course, that's up to the judge, and we'll just have to see how he rules.
The investigation has become political since Governor Palin entered national politics and her campaign began criticizing the pending investigator's report. Previously, the governor had volunteered full cooperation with the investigation. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
The state begins taking applications today for a vastly expanded home heating assistance program. The amount of money available has doubled this year to $20 million. Half of that's through the long-running federal low-income home energy assistance program, or LIHEAP, with the rest coming from a new state program approved by the legislature last spring. State Heating Assistance Program Coordinator Susan Marshall says the state program expands eligibility.
Essentially, it mirrors the federally funded LIHEAP program, with the exception of that the new Alaska Heating Assistance Program now covers people with incomes 151% to 225% of the poverty income guideline. These are those working folks, usually just above the income guidelines for the federally funded program, which cuts off eligibility at 150%.
Marshall says that could double the number of Alaskans who get help with their heating bills this winter. Nearly 10,000 qualified for assistance last year under the federal program. Both the federal and state program guidelines provide for varying amounts of assistance based on income, number of people per family, location, and home type. Awards are paid directly to customers' fuel suppliers. Marshall says she expects heavy demand.
Because of the higher price in fuel and the economy in general, there's more and more people each year. We see our numbers going up who are applying for the program.
Marshall says 900 applications have been received since an early application period for the elderly and disabled began last month. An avalanche of additional responses is expected with today's start of the general application period. Meanwhile, another increase in federal home heating assistance dollars for states has passed Congress and is awaiting President Bush's signature. Susan Marshall says that would allow more people to get help and possibly bump up award amounts. Homelessness in Anchorage is growing, and the number of homeless families and individuals continues to outnumber emergency and low-cost housing available in the city. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
3 years ago, when the Anchorage Assembly approved the municipality's 10-year plan on homelessness, it also requested annual updates. Last Friday at a work session, members received an advanced look at this year's report. The over half dozen people presenting the update pointed to some successes, but also considerable frustration and even more apprehension. Janet Levin is with the Anchorage School District's homeless program.
As of this morning, 1,342 homeless children and youth have been identified by Anchorage School District.
The number is higher than last year. Levin says typically these families have lost their homes because of a basic disparity in Anchorage economics.
In Anchorage in the last 10 years, wages have gone up 38%, while real estate has gone up 100%. And if you have a sick child or an illness yourself, or you get downsized, or your hours are reduced, or you didn't have health insurance, or your car breaks down and you can't get to work, all of those factors also tie in.
The task of guiding Anchorage's 10-year homelessness plan falls to the municipality's Department of Neighborhoods. The department works with a coalition of various groups. Trevor Storrs co-chairs the coalition's oversight board. Storrs says the coalition's long-term goal for 2015 of getting every homeless person into affordable housing within 90 days has hit a 2008 barrier.
We have almost a flat stock of affordable housing. So the more people we put in the system does not mean that they'll automatically find it. So we need to also be building affordable housing.
Storrs says Anchorage has to think beyond temporary shelters and emphasize permanent affordable housing for the poor. He does not fault contractors for not building more low-cost units. He agrees contractors need firm assurance rent payments will be met and their profits comparable to other housing projects. As he defines low-cost housing, Storrs notes it's a moving target.
Probably $600, $500 a month. Finding that's going to be really hard. However, with rental assistance programs, they put 30% of their salary towards it. So most places can be affordable at $800 for a one-bedroom. That's pretty good, but we're starting to see one-bedrooms reaching $9 to $1,000.
The pressure on the city's emergency and temporary shelters is also growing. Safe Harbor, a temporary nonprofit hotel for homeless families and the disabled, will soon open a 50-room facility in Northeast Anchorage. That October expansion will only reduce Safe Harbor's waiting list, not eliminate it. The city's other shelters are also noting increased pressure. Captain Jessica Elgart directs the Salvation Army's McKinnell House. Elgart says her 16-unit facility is seeing a new trend.
One of the reasons we're seeing an influx of people from the interior and other parts of Alaska to Anchorage is McKinnell House is the only homeless shelter for a two-parent family or a single father in the state.
Until about a year ago, the school district's Levin says she dealt with 6 to 12 families a year sleeping in their cars. So far in 2008, she's helped approximately 75. On any given day, about 10 families are on the wait list. For those, she can do little.
What I tell parents is woefully inadequate. What I can offer in my job at the school district is I ask the parents to call me in the morning and we'll make sure that we get their kids to school. That's what we can do. But the subtext, especially as we face winter, is really scary. I would anticipate it will be worse this winter.
That subtext is a family freezing to death in their car before Levin can find temporary shelter for them. The municipality's Department of Neighborhoods presents its annual homeless update at this evening's Anchorage Assembly meeting. This is Len Anderson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alaska Railroad Corporation, with daily rail service to Seward, Whittier, Anchorage, Talkeetna, Denali Park, and Fairbanks through mid-September. Information available at alaskarailroad.com. The voter registration deadline for the November 4th general election is approaching. Voters have until Sunday, October 5th, to register or update their existing voter registration. Forms are available at any Division of Elections office, municipal clerk's office, and at tribal offices. Forms are also available at elections.alaska.gov. or by calling 1-866-952-8683. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections.
A new audit says Alaska Electric Light and Power charged its customers properly and did not make any windfall profit after avalanches knocked out Juneau's main source of power in April. KTOO's John Ryan reports.
LG Rehfeld-Mertz crunched the numbers for the city and borough of Juneau. The accountants pored over utility records. They found that AEL&P spent $8.9 million to burn 2.3 million gallons of diesel in its generators. And as Juneau ratepayers experienced, the company also more than quadrupled the price of electricity. Max Mertz presented the findings to the assembly Monday night.
They did only recover the cost of the diesel. They did fairly apply their rates. They calculated the rates in accordance with their tariff agreements.
Mertz says the power company billed customers fairly and consistently in all customer classes. He says state regulators contacted for the audit also said the utility had done everything properly and professionally. AEL&P covered the city's cost for the audit and for creating a lessons learned commission. Max Mertz said the audit cost nearly $10,000 to complete, but he didn't feel good about making money off the energy emergency, so he only billed the city about $3,000. Mertz didn't audit the environmental impact of the emergency, but with each gallon of diesel releasing 22 pounds of carbon dioxide, AEL&P's generator sent about 25,000 tons of heat-trapping gases into the atmosphere. To generate that much CO2, you'd have to drive all 30,000 cars and trucks registered in Juneau about 1,300 miles each. In just 6 weeks, the normally green utility poured more CO2 into the sky than Southeast Alaska's biggest climate polluter does in a year. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation says the Greens Creek Mine on Admiralty Island puts out about 15,000 tons of carbon dioxide a year. In Juneau, I'm John Ryan.
Gang-related trouble continues to plague Fairbanks. Several incidents in the last week, including vehicle-to-vehicle gunfire, have drawn police attention. The latest violence was a midday drive-by shooting Monday. No injuries have been reported, and Fairbanks Police Lieutenant Dan Wellborn says it's challenging to sort out who's responsible for the trouble.
We have a lot of, flip-flopping is the best way to put it. We'll have a victim one day that, you know, the very next day they're going to be our suspect. They're the same ones that we've been dealing with time and time again. And each time we deal with them, their stories are the same. They don't know who it is. They don't know why they're being targeted.
Wellborn says some vehicles have been impounded and several arrests made in gang-related incidents over the last 2 months. He estimates about a dozen people, including minors, are central to the recent trouble. Many claim to be members of established Lower 48 rival gangs like the Crips and the Bloods. And Wellborn says reports from a high-speed chase Sunday back that up.
Bandanas being worn up over the faces, guns were being shown, gang signs were being flashed.
Wellborn says police are doing what they can to tie individuals to crimes they can be charged with. Most of the violence has been between alleged gang members, and despite a lack of serious injuries, Wellborn says the public is at risk.
Just 4 days ago, we had another incident where they were following a vehicle and they decided to jump out and smash out the rear window. This is at Airport in Lathrop, a crowded intersection in the Fairbanks area. And this is at 3 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon in crowded areas.
Wellborn says the closest call came this summer when stray bullets in a drug-related gang shootout nearly struck passers-by. One man has been indicted in that case. Attorneys for Jason Abbott have asked to move his multiple homicide trial to Juneau. In a motion filed last month, Marcy McDaniel with the Office of Public Advocacy argues that her 19-year-old client won't get a fair trial in Sitka, where the crime was committed. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Abbott is alleged to have used a knife to murder his grandparents, an aunt and her boyfriend, and to seriously injure another aunt in a violent rampage on the morning of March 25th. The incident occurred in a quiet Sitka neighborhood about 3 blocks from the courthouse. In her motion, McDaniel writes that, by sensationalizing the case, the media has greatly complicated and compromised Mr. Abbott's right to a fair trial before an impartial jury within the Sitka venue. The only appropriate remedy is to transfer the venue and select the jury from persons less close to the scene, the victims, and the media barrage against Mr. Abbott. McDaniel goes on to warn of additional media coverage should the case go to trial. She writes, "The court saw for itself at the recent status hearing in Sitka that the media has latched on to Mr. Abbott and his case as a highly newsworthy subject, capable of generating millions of dollars in ad revenue from the broadcast of so-called reality television programs. While there may be no way to turn or dampen that particular feeding frenzy, there is one way to enhance Mr. Abbott's chances of receiving a fair trial, and that is to transfer the venue from Sitka to Juneau." McDaniel acknowledges that the cost and logistics of moving the case to Juneau represent a hurdle for the court, but she believes that the cost of the transfer is proportionate to the serious nature of the case. She also argued that the defense will motion to expand the potential jury pool to outlying villages in Southeast to ensure that Alaska Natives are fairly represented. Transportation and logistics, McDaniel writes, would be easier for those potential jurors if the venue were in Juneau. Judge George is scheduled to rule on the motion for a venue change within the next week. Currently, the trial of Jason Abbott is scheduled for June 1, 2009 in Sitka. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The 2008 Homer Halibut Jackpot Derby has ended. KBBI's Emily Schwing has the story.
This year's Jackpot Halibut Derby winner was Jeff Pardee of San Rafael, California.
I hooked into this fish, and we had no idea what it weighed, how much it was, or anything like that. And so we just had a great time with it and caught a beautiful 348-pound halibut on a jig.
Pardee says it only took an hour and a half to reel in the fish.
And when I knew that it was gaffed, that was it. You know, it was on. It was ready to go. It was coming aboard. And then as it came over the rail, it was just amazing. And we just had no idea how big this fish was.
Pardee was fishing on the Ocean Hunter owned and captained by Keith Kalki. Kalki says the catch is good for business. But Kalki says he knew as soon as it was hooked that Pardee's fish was one worth landing.
I knew it was big. It's just a matter of how big. You never know, you know. Sometimes you get 200-pound fish that fight like 400-pound fish, you know. And sometimes it works opposite. You get a little fish that, you know, thinks he's the big boy on a block.
This year, two potential Derby contenders lost out after failing to buy tickets. And Pardee says he could have been in the same boat.
The first day that we went out fishing on the Ocean Hunter, my friend Casey and I bought him a ticket, but I didn't want him to know that I bought him. I just wanted to do something nice for him. And, you know, I just had no idea. So the second day we went out with him, he asked me, do you want a Derby ticket? And I'm like, no, not today. And my friend Casey bought one, and we called in the Derby ticket. And, maybe if I didn't buy that ticket out of good luck that day before, just out of being the friend, I probably would not have bought that ticket.
Kalki says most of the fishermen he brings on his boat come ready to fish the Derby.
Oh, yeah. Probably 90% of my clients will buy tickets. Basically, if they know they're fishing with me, I'm always going to try to get big fish.
Jeff Pardee will collect over $45,000 in prize money at the Jackpot Derby Jamboree in Homer on October 11th. The exact amount is still being calculated. Reporting in Homer, I'm Emily Schwing.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Weld Royal and John Ryan in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Emily Schwing in Homer. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, providing tax-advantaged college savings options for Alaska families. T. Rowe Price Investment Services Incorporated, distributor, underwriter. Information at 1-888-4, and then Alaska. And by the Alaska Community Foundation, encouraging listeners to tune into AK every weekend. Your local public radio station has airtimes. Lack of maintenance is the primary reason heating oil tanks contaminate drinking water, sewers, and stormwater drains. Homeowners are liable under state law for the cleanup of spills from home heating oil tanks on their property. So prevent spills by arranging an inspection of tanks and heating equipment before and during the heating season. Information online at dec.state.ak.us. Click on the Spill Prevention and Response link. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.